who doesn't love a good rock and roll scream, right, Lily?
I do.
All right. From Little Richard to David Lee Roth, rock singers have always accented their vocal performances with powerful screams. So on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we're going to tell you everything you didn't know about the top 13 screams in rock and roll. Plus, we have a very special guest, Chris Sinzak, who's going to tell us all about this year's Rockin' Pod Expo. You don't want to miss it. Stick around. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. All right, everybody, welcome back, moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome back to the circus. I am Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini, the ringmaster of this wild and crazy thing we do every week here on the internet, the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast. You can find us still right now at loulombardimusic.com. Our official website is being redesigned and should be showing up within the next few days. So that's pretty exciting. I'm pretty excited to have that coming out for you. Let's go ahead and take care of a little bit of business. First of all, a shout out to Rock Rage Radio. Go to rockrageradio.com. Download the app. You can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7. There's great shows on there like this one, as well as what, Lily?
Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Awesome.
Or 24 hours everything.
Exactly. And so check them out. Download the app at rockrageradio.com. Shout out to our sponsor, Wolf's Customs. Wolf'sCustoms.online. Listen, guys, I've been telling you guys for months now. Now we're moving in from the Zoom things to actually going out and playing gigs. There's no reason to get up on stage with the same old boring-looking guitar like the last three bands it played had. You can talk to Chris Thunderwolf Dotson at wolfscustoms.online, and they could do an awesome custom finish. And this is pro stuff, guys. This isn't a guy. This guy knows what he's doing. He's a musician himself. He's going to treat your instrument with kid gloves. That sounded kind of dirty, didn't it?
A little bit. It's okay.
I always like my instrument treated with kid gloves.
Oh my!
No.
Anyways, I'm sorry. We have a guest here, and we should be acting more professional. Lily.
Oh, behave!
No,
please. Then you should have invited me.
But no, seriously, this is totally pro stuff, and you can check him out at wolfscustoms.online. Chris has been a big supporter of the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus for a long time now. Chris Thunderwolf Dotson and Company at wolfscustoms.online. Don't forget, guys, to if you're listening to us on iTunes, please hit that rate and review thing. Give us a nice review. Give us a good rating and subscribe. iTunes is kind of like Google for podcasts. If you do good on iTunes, your podcast does better. Just like in everything else, if you do good on Google, your business does better. So we're really looking for that. We really do appreciate it if you love us. You don't need to give us any money or anything like that. Just give us a good review and rate us. Subscribe on iTunes. It costs you nothing. Nothing.
Zero.
Okay. Also, by going to loulombardimusic.com and very soon, ludinirockandrollcircus.com, there'll be all the stuff there to access our inner circle group and hang out and be able to chat with us throughout the week in our private Facebook group. There's free downloads. My album is still there. New music coming. So check it all out at loulombardimusic.com. Anything I'm forgetting right now, Lily, that I need to talk about?
I'm pretty sure you got
I did it all across. Okay. So. Now I want to talk about Chris Sinzak. Chris is the man who has been organizing this very, very, very cool thing called Rockin' Pod. And we're going to get into that a little bit more about that. We're going to interview Chris here in a little while. But Chris, say hey, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on tonight.
No problem. No problem. And I, Chris, I know I was listening to your podcast today. You're obviously a very knowledgeable guy about music. So do you have like a favorite off the top of your head tune with like an awesome rock scream in it that you love?
Oh, I've already got a list together.
Oh, he's got a whole list. Well, he's a professional. Oh, boy. He's not like us, like lunkheads who like throw shit together at the last minute. He's
I better stop drinking.
So here's how we do it, Chris. We go around the room and we discuss and talk a little bit about the song or whatever the topic is tonight. Tonight it's these songs with screaming in them. So that's how we do it. And we're going to start just to kind of get warmed up. We're going to go ahead and start with Lily, V6. And I think we have some overlapping ones, but don't worry about that. You pick whatever one you want
I'm
to talk about.
I'm not worried about it.
Okay, I could see that.
But I'm going to pick one of my all-time favorite songs ever by one of my all-time favorite bands that I like to mention almost every show we do, The Number of the Beast, Iron Maiden, released in 1982. I mean, do we really need a reason why this should be on the list? Probably not. But it is said to be one of the most satisfying screams in music. It's the note. It's the moment that Satan himself entered the body of Bruce Dickinson.
What? No, he didn't.
Come on.
Satan did not enter. That's the kind of story that gets rock and roll a bad name. Now everybody's going to say Satan lives in Bruce Dickinson.
That's not a Lily quote, by the way. I found that quote.
Oh, my God.
Oh, these kids today.
Yeah, kids. He has so much energy. He leads us into the new section of the song with a truly powerful scream. He sings the scream. It's like listening to a symphony. And it's known for that high-pitched and guttural wail at the end of the intro. It is described as the most blood-curdling Dickinson scream on record. In the classic album's documentary based on the Number of the Beast album, Dickinson states that it came about through frustration with producer Martin Birch, who forced him to sing the introduction repeatedly for hours on end. Iron Maiden is one of the few bands that can turn the concept of an old 18th century poem into an incredibly exciting and epic heavy metal song, and I do owe part of that to the scream.
There is a great... Where's my pen? They're behind the music is really, really good, and they talk about that exact thing about him like trying to get that intro.
Yeah.
And they did it over and over, and you're right, they did it.
I'm surprised that he even had a voice to be able to do it in the end.
That's a good one, Lily. Thanks for bringing that one in. And we're going to go to Pittsburgh Kevin.
Oh, hey.
And then we're going to go to Chris. So what do you got, Pittsburgh Kevin?
So I got some obscure ones here.
Sweet.
Do you remember Joe Cocker's cover of...
A little help from my friends.
Yes. Thank you, Lou. Thank you. You know what I needed, Lou? A little help from my friends. Yes.
Ba-dum-ba.
Yeah. So he's got a great scream in there. You know, so that's my contribution for now. I am a lunkhead, unlike Lily and you. I don't have any backstories other than...
Well, you're fired.
The man just let it go.
I like to get anecdotes and stuff.
Yes. Well, that's why you're a professional and I'm a lunkhead.
Do you have anything on that?
I don't. I did not know he was going to bring out some deep cuts there.
Hold on. We're professionals. Lou's a professional.
Obviously, John Lennon, Paul McCartney wrote the song. Beatles recorded it a year earlier. It was never released as a single. The Beatles were so impressed with Cocker's version of it that they sent him a telegram of congratulations and placed an ad in the music papers praising it. The song was recorded in 3/4 time as a waltz. The Beatles' original version was in 4/4 time. Mm. Jimmy Page is the guitar player on this, by the
Shut
way.
Shut up. How about
yes.
that?
Yes. Yep. And BJ Wilson for Procol Harum played drums on the track. Soul singers Madeline Bell Reeves, Rosetta Hightower, Patrice Holloway, and Sonny Wheatman provided the backing vocals. Song topped the UK charts on 3 occasions. Cocker's version, then in 88, Wet, 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 hit number one again, and a double A-sided charity single. And in 04, Sam and Mark from the 04 UK pop Idol. So I guess that's their version of American Idol.
Right.
Yeah. Brought it to the charts again. Cocker also covered the Beatles' I'll Cry Instead. She came in through the bathroom window and You've Got to Hide Your Love Away. Danny Cordell produced the album with Tony Visconti, who went on to do all kinds of stuff. Sesame Street did a parody of it.
That's awesome.
He performed this at Woodstock as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Cocker is only one of two acts who performed at Woodstock to have had a UK number one hit. The other was Jimi Hendrix, who had a chart topper with Voodoo Child's Slight Return. Cocker's version was the do you remember this? Theme song to the Wonder Years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kevin and Winnie.
Yes, yes, oh. Yes, yes. I know where memories. But in '02, Cocker performed this with Phil Collins on drums and Queen guitarist Brian May for Party at the Palace, a celebration of Buckingham Palace in honor of the Golden Jubilee of Elizabeth II. This was used in The Simpsons in a '94 episode. So it's everywhere. It's a great version. And that scream is absolutely freaking legendary. That's why I used it in the pick for the events on Facebook, because it is just absolutely amazing. All right, so let's jump over to Chris. And Chris says he has a whole list. So what do you got, Chris? Give us one, bro.
Well, I'll start off. I don't have the amount of notes you guys have per song, so this is going to go fast. But I'm wearing my Kiss shirt tonight, and anyone who knows me knows I'm a massive Kiss fan. So I have to go with the obvious. I have to go with my friend Paul Stanley. So yeah, there's a little sound.
Look at that.
Heaven's on Fire?
No, I'm going to go. Well, that is a good one. And the story behind that's interesting. He was just doing vocal warm-ups before the drums kicked in. And they're like, let's keep that. That's the intro to the song.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But I'm going to go obscure with this one. There's a song on the album Carnival of Souls that they released in the 90s. And it's called Master and Slave. And it's got him. The whole song stops and he does this massive scream in the middle of the song. So that's my first one.
Good. Nice. Okay. Cool. Give us another one, since you got a whole list and not a whole lot of backstory. So that's cool. Go ahead.
All right. Well, the next singer that came to mind immediately was Rob Halford from Judas Priest, and I've got a tie. It's two picks. So the first one is from Sad Wings of Destiny. It's the big scream at the end of Victim of Changes, which is just an incredible scream on that song. And then my favorite Judas Priest song from Sin After Sin, and the big scream on this one is right in the beginning. And that's Dissident Aggressor, which I just love that song.
Okay. You had did you have a Priest on yours?
I did.
Which one? Okay. Good ones, Chris. Thanks, man. And I like the little sound bite.
That was good.
I have to be careful. I get smacked all the time because of sound bites and stuff. That's why you're not hearing any music. I'm not. Facebook.
Oh, anything
and YouTube.
I have is not music. It's just words. So
you got
like
a little
okay.
thing. I got you, bro. I got you. Cool. Well, thanks for that. That's cool. What do you got, Lily?
I guess we'll go with my Priest song now. It's Painkiller, the opening song on the album of the same name, 1990. It's basically one big scream and is known for Halford's high pitched screeching throughout the entire song. He's pretty much the grandmaster of screaming. He could have had several songs on this list, as you named a couple there. I went with this one. It was nominated for the Grammy Award for Best Metal Performance during the 33 Grammy Awards, the second year the award was presented. I have to see what else I have. Some say Chuck Schuldiner's from the band Death's cover of the song is better. I have to disagree, but apparently it is a song to scream to, because he also does the screams as well.
It just inspires you to scream.
Yes.
I've been known to do that with certain lady friends of mine. Oh. You know, I inspire them.
To scream.
Yeah. Anyways.
I don't hear anything next door, so I don't believe you.
You don't believe me. I am going to go with, I don't think anybody, I don't know, Chris might have his list, I don't know, but I'm going to go with this song right here. And people forget that there is awesome scream in this. It's short and it's small, but it's still a great scream. And that is Joan Jett's "Ow!"
It's powerful.
In "I Love Rock and Roll." I mean, that really totally makes the song. I remember being when did this come out, Kev? 81. You know, so middle school kid, junior high kid, and that I just thought that was just the stuff, the shit. And some people don't realize Joan Jett doesn't write any songs, right? She's pretty much is a cover artist.
Right. It's okay though.
You know, that's her thing. And I'm not here to throw stones or to, say that Joan Jett's the greatest artist in the world. But there was a giant, giant song, and it's got a really kick-ass a scream in it. It was originally recorded by the Arrows in 75, written by their lead singer and guitarist. And it was a knee-jerk response to the Rolling Stones song, It's Only Rock and Roll. I remember watching it on Top of the Pops. I'd met Jagger socially a few times, and I knew he was hanging around with some different people, some different jet setters, and he felt like It's Only Rock and Roll was an apology for those sort of jet set prince and princess types that he was like hanging around with, this sort of aristocracy. And that was, he was sort of his interpretation. And he said, okay, I love rock and roll. And then where'd he go with that? So it was a sort of like response to that. Jet was touring in England as a member of the all-teenage girl group The Runaways. When she discovered the song, she wanted to record it with The Runaways, but the other members didn't like the song and made the mistake of passing it up. So in 79, Jet recorded with Paul Cook and Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols, released it as a B-side. Finally, in 81, Joan recorded the song with her band, The Blackhearts, resulting in a monster.
Yes.
Monster. Hit that I will proudly say I roller skated to.
I probably did that too.
I roller skated.
But much later.
I did roller skate to.
But much later.
What do you got, Pittsburgh Kevin?
I'm going to go with the venerable Cheap Trick, Gonna Raise Hell.
Oh, yeah. Good one.
Nice. Yes.
So I now turn it over to you, since I was lacking
in
my note taking today.
That is terrible.
You're fired.
You can't you can't play in my podcast anymore. Oh, shame on you.
Oh.
My good. Next
but it's a good pick anyway.
What's that?
It's a good pick anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good pick. It's a good pick. It's by Cheap Trick, released on the album Dream Police, Epic Rocker. Disco Beat contains the interlude for violins and cellos. And the score was it was scored by Rick Nielsen, the guitar player, and keyboardist Jai Winding. Bassist Tom Peterson recalled, "We always wanted to work with an orchestra, you know, but their producer didn't really want to do anything to do with it. He sort of did this begrudgingly for them, and he said they were like, oh, come on, it'll be great." Hence, that's why that's in there. No word on why the screams are in there, but that's, again, rockers love to scream. You know, go back to go back to the beginning, go back to the old blues. But I mentioned in the intro there, you know, Little Richard.
Yeah, I mean, legit.
You know, what the hell? What do you got, Chris?
I'm going to skip over the next one, and because the next one I have on my list, I pretty sure one of you is going to have it and have way better notes than I have. So I'm going to go to the next. This one's another kind of off the beaten path one. Is anyone in this recording a fan of Tool?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. So before Tool like really broke big, they put out this this EP called Opiate that came out in, was it 92? And it came out on Zoo Records, has a crazy looking cover. And there's a couple of live tracks on this one, and I bought this back when I was in college, and I used to play this song constantly just because the scream that Maynard James Keenan lets out like near the end of the song. And the song is, not really a great title. It's called Jerk Off, but it's where he screams the word die, and it must, I swear it goes on for like 45 straight seconds. It's one of the greatest screams I've ever heard.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. When I was doing some research for this, I don't think anybody, maybe Chris, you have these guys on your list, but there were several Tenacious D songs on people's list, and I listened to some of them, and man, that Jack Black dude, holy
crap!
Yeah,
he can definitely scream.
Yeah, he's kind of underrated as a singer.
I totally agree with you on that. I think that like if he wasn't like an actor comedian, like he could totally have been a rock singer. Absolutely. Oh, sure. Absolutely.
He totally has the look, too.
All right. Lily, what do you got?
I'm going to go with Tom Araya from Angel Death Slayer, the opening track of Rain and Blood. They detail the Nazi physician Joseph, is it Mengele?
Mengele,
thank you. It's human experiments at the Auschwitz concentration camp during World War II. So imagine what this song sounded like to all of the other music fans of the 1980s who thought Journey and Aerosmith were really heavy. everything in this song, including the collection of Satan summoning riffs. I'm sorry, I keep mentioning Satan today. I don't know what that is. Tom's vocals and explicit lyrics paints a gruesome picture that we know as Angel of Death. Slayer is known for starting their songs without too much of a buildup. They went right into it. Just like in the song where Raya has his piercing, wordless scream right after the few repetitions of the intro riff. So That's most Slayer songs, though, I suppose. That's one of those.
Well, what I just didn't want to do, and so far, no, but everybody, I think, got the concept. I didn't want to pick, like, because there's metal bands, like, that's their whole thing, is just screaming the whole time. So right. That kind of, like, doesn't count. So no. That's cool. That's good. Good pick there. And in terms of your Satan problem, we'll have a Bible study afterwards where we will pray for you.
We'll just do the exorcism and forget the Bible part.
Oh, right. Nice.
Go right to the exorcism.
Right to it.
Forget that
Bible crap.
I don't want the labor pains.
Speaking of Bible crap, Pittsburgh Kevin, what are you going to throw at me? First of all, just tell me the title so that I can look it up real quick so I can help you out.
Jump into the fire.
Okay.
So your friend and mine, Harry Nilsson.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yes. Yes.
I know some stuff actually about this song.
He knows some stuff.
I know things. That's why I hang out with him.
See, you don't think I know stuff. I know you know things.
I know you know things.
See what I have to put up with?
Uh-huh. And yet you keep coming back for more.
It would come up on, hold on a second, why won't this come up on Song Facts? Jump into the. I don't think that's what it's called. Is that what the actual song's called?
I believe so. Is it Into the Fire? That might bring up Dawkin.
Brings up a couple things.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
There he is, Nilsson. I'll find it real quick.
Nilsson Schmilsson.
This song was recorded.
Yes.
And no, it's not. It doesn't come up on Song Facts. but there's a great documentary about Nilsson. Nilsson Schmilsson. In fact, that's the title of one of his albums. But there's a great documentary about this, and this was something that he worked on with John Lennon, and they took it take after take after take. Literally, there was blood on the microphone from how hard he was screaming. He did irreparable damage to his voice. And even though he was still able to sing, he never quite had that same sort of like sparkle after that. He had gone, was kind of going through like kind of like a dark period. This was at the time that John left Yoko Ono to kind of go sow some wild oats like in Southern California. Yes. And he started hanging, and him and Nilsson partnered up. The Beatles, him, Paul McCartney, and John Lennon loved Harry Nilsson. They absolutely thought he was the absolute shit. So he was flattered to work with them. They were flattered to work, you know, they were happy to work with totally excited to work with John Lennon. And but yeah, that's true screaming blood, sweat and tears on that track.
Yes.
You know. And it definitely has, with that echo and everything, it definitely has that John Lennon, you know, that slapback. It definitely has that sound on it. But that's a good pick, Kevin. Thanks. What do you got, Chris?
Okay, the next one is it's another singer where I have a tie for the songs that for this singer. And actually, I think today is the anniversary of Holy Diver by Dio.
Chris, I was listening to your podcast with Vinny App. Is it Apice or a piece?
Well, for him, it's Apice. For Carmine, it's a piece.
Okay. All right. So, and it's so great. So this awesome that you're bringing this up. I was listening to it right before we got set up here. So go ahead, bro.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for plugging that. Check out the episode on Decibel Geek if you can. And so I picked off of Holy Diver, I picked Don't Talk to Strangers, because that's one where once he really goes into the big scream because it starts off really mellow and everything. And then another example of him doing that would be on the next album on Last in Line on the title track when he breaks into the full on scream. But, you know, and Dio was good at doing that. And I don't know if any of you guys are into reaction videos on YouTube, but I watch them sometimes where like these millennials will listen to old metal songs.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
And both of those songs, it's hilarious watching everybody's eyes about pop out of their head when he breaks into those screams on those videos. But if you want to, we did a really fun interview with Vinny Appice, and it was great talking to him. But Ronnie James Dio, I mean, what can you say? Just one of the greatest of all time. But those are my two of my favorite moments of his.
I think those are awesome picks. I don't know what's going on. Restream is being a jerk, so. I don't know. So hopefully we're recording anyway, so it's all good. That is Dio. I was wondering if somebody's going to bring up Dio. I'm glad somebody brought up Dio. Dio's my favorite singer of all time.
Of all time?
Oh, cool. Of all time, yes, absolutely. So, good one, Chris. Maybe I'll say one.
Maybe I'll say one.
Maybe I'll just... Okay, we did a... Tuesday of the month, second week of the month, we do a classic album. We take an album, we do like an album retrospective.
Yeah.
Okay? And... we did 2 months ago, we did The Who's Next. Mm-hmm. And went through the whole record, and this song closes the album, and it's Won't Get Fooled Again. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the most memorable screams in rock and roll. And if you've ever seen the video clip of them playing it with the psychedelic lights,
oh, yeah,
and Pete Townsend sliding across the floor, I mean, I get chills just thinking about it. It's just absolutely amazing. And Roger is a screamer from like way back. I was listening to Love Rain on Me, and when it comes around the second time, when he hits those loves, I mean, he's screaming those out, and it is so emotional and so freaking powerful that I don't know what else you could say about it, but he's just one of the great screamers. But yeah, I got that scream there at the end of Won't Get Fooled Again, for sure.
That's definitely like a number one on a lot of people's lists.
That's the one I skipped over.
Yeah, all right, go.
Else would have it.
Yeah, total classic rock moment right there. Lily, then Kevin, then we're going to interview Chris about Rockin' Pod.
All right, word. Okay. So I'm going to go with an obvious one, Immigrant Song, Led Zeppelin.
Ah.
The most triumphant of Plants Howls was from this song, a tale of ancient Vikings who sailed from Scandinavia to conquer new lands. Plant was inspired to write about the land of ice and snow during a concert tour. They went to Iceland, and it made you think of Vikings and big ships, so... Immigrant Song. Bang. There it is. The classic rocker opens with what he has been called as an anguished cry and a Tarzan holler. His chilling Viking war cry followed by a hammering riff by guitarist Jimmy Page, bassist John Paul Jones, and drummer John Bonham. Though the song was used to open Led Zeppelin's show for years, Plant's call may never be heard again. He doesn't want to do it anymore. He doesn't want to scream Immigrant Song every night for the rest of his life.
Leave that to the Zeppelin tribute band.
He's not sure that he could anyway, but...
Greta Van Fleet.
There it is. It's also featured in Shrek the Third. Snow White sings the beginning of it to ward off enemies. Just throwing some nerdery cartoon stuff there.
It's in Thor Ragnarok, I believe.
Yes.
I believe that's when he's fighting that whatever he's fighting. And it's awesome. Like, anytime a Led Zeppelin song shows up in a movie, you're like, let's do that. Let's do that. I love that. Good pick, Lily. That's on a lot of people's lists. Mm-hmm. Kevin, what do you got, bro?
Lou, you know I love the ladies. You know I love the ladies, so I'm going to bring a lady into this mix here, and that is the venerable Janis Joplin. Yes, Peace of My Heart.
That's such a good one.
Yeah.
Yes, sung by Janis Joplin. It's technically a Big Brother and the Holding Company.
There you go. Yeah.
One of the groups, she sang before, this was the band she was in before she went solo until her, and later in 68, when she went solo, biggest chart-topping success was known as For Me and Bobby McGee. The song is about a lovelorn woman so enraptured by her man that she's willing to break off yet another piece of her heart if only he will take it. Mm. I mean, this is like, I mean, if the song has become a little bit overplayed, probably, right? I mean, I've been in so many, anytime you play in a band and you have a female singer, it's like mandatory, you got to cover Peace of My Heart by Big Brother and the Holding Company. So a lot of people are like, you know, it's become not as effective as it was when it was released. But if you think about the meaning of the song, you know, that's like, she's crying in like literal, like the pain of love, you know. Yes. Joplin showed off her extraordinary vocal dexterity on the song, which was right in her wheelhouse in terms of dynamics and subject matter. And this was just one of those things that just really kind of showcased everything that was awesome about Janis Joplin. You know, her version, you know, Cry, Cry Baby was another one that has just like...
Another whale.
Oh, my God. Like tortured whale, but yet absolutely beautiful performance. So good pick, Pittsburgh Kevin.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's have a chat now.
A chat.
I'll tell you, we'll quickly tell you the last three are on my list.
Yeah, go, well, we can come back to that, but go ahead. Tell us your list.
Just the last three I had was Steven Tyler on Back in the Saddle from Rock.
Oh, good one. Yeah.
Another one, the end of Cemetery Gates by Pantera, Phil Anselmo, nice. Where him and Daryl go back and forth with the high note.
Yes.
And then Wasted Time by Skid Row, Sebastian Bach.
Yes.
There you go.
Wow.
As much as I don't like to talk about him, but yes, that's I love the band.
Oh, he doesn't like me either, but don't worry.
Oh, word. Him. Oh, no. He doesn't like me for another reason than you, I'm sure.
But we're not allowed to talk about the reason why Lily doesn't like Lily. She doesn't like Lily. That's top secret stuff. So we have Chris Sinzak here of the Decibel Geek podcast. That's it, the Decibel Geek podcast. Mm-hmm. Okay, so but before we talk about that, can you sort of give us the Reader's Digest version of like sort of your journey into music?
Into music or into podcasting?
You are a music journalist or something, correct? Before you got into podcasting? I mean, listen to your podcast. Dude, you know a lot of shit about music. I thought I knew a lot about music. I thought Lily knew a lot about music. I thought Keith knew a lot about music. Dude, you know a lot about music. So you obviously have some passion for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, music's been it's been a main direction in my life, my whole life. I mean, I obviously grew up a fan, got into rock and roll. And then I did start playing guitar when I was a kid, and then moved up to playing in bands in high school through college and then into my 20s. And nobody you've heard of. And like, we never really got off the ground, but played clubs and stuff.
Of course,
but, after I met my wife, you know, she had two kids and then I had to settle down. I was like, well, I got to settle down. I can't be in bands anymore, but I need to stay connected to rock and roll. So at that time, I had just gotten a day job, which I actually hated, but I got an iPod, and that's when I found what podcasts were on the Apple
iTunes. What year, like, about is this?
2009, 10.
Okay, that's what I mean. Okay, that's about right.
Well, let me go back a little bit. Before that, though, actually in the mid-2000s, 2004, 2005, I started writing for a local rock website. That was what it was. And initially, I still had a band at that time, and the only reason I took the job writing for the website is so I could promote my band. You're a musician, you know how that is.
Yep.
So I did that. The band fell apart, and then after the band fell apart, I'm like, well, I can take this more seriously. Took over that, started booking concerts, which I recommend to no one. Don't ever book concerts.
I'm learning that.
Yeah, very hard, especially with local acts. But did that, and then I got to meet a lot of people through that website, because as like I started covering the national acts that were coming in, so like Corey Glover from Living Color, Michael Wilton from Queensryche, I was interviewing them ahead of the time they came in for shows, and I got a real charge off of that, and I'm like, well, that's more fun than writing. So then, I got a day job, and that's how I discovered podcasting, right around 2009, 2010. So at the time, it was mostly comedy podcast. It was like Mark Maron, Adam Carolla, and Nerdist and stuff like that.
Right.
There wasn't a lot for rock and roll podcasting back in those days. But I was also, I was still writing on the side. I was actually putting a book together about Vinnie Vincent, who used to be in Kiss. And
the Vinnie Vincent invasion. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole saga with that. But yeah,
there always is.
I was about 100+ pages in on it. My whole hard drive crashed. I lost most of the book.
Oh, no.
And, but I still had audio interviews I had conducted for the book. And so at the time I'm listening to podcasts and I have these audio interviews, I'm like, well, I can do this. I'll just put these interviews on a podcast and I'll start doing it that way. And that's how it started.
I see. So how did Decibel Geek come about?
Well, that was really it. I mean, I had these interviews and I was like, well, I could do a rock and roll podcast and see how that goes. And so I started up on my own, and the first two Vinnie Vincent specials came out, and I interviewed I had interviews with people that had worked with him and mostly all been burned by him. And, I was shocked. Like, I was thinking nobody was going to give a damn about it, but like so much interest, like the numbers kind of went off the charts when I put those out. And I did it on my own for a couple of months. And then my co-host Aaron Camaro came on board, and he had radio experience and everything. And so he was a DJ in the past, and he missed being a DJ. And he's like, well, this is even better because I can do what I want to do. And that's how it started. That was in 2011. So, yeah, we just passed the 10-year mark this year.
Well, congratulations. And, yeah, Adam definitely has that rock DJ voice. You can hear
Aaron. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron, I'm sorry. Aaron. Yeah. Sorry. Then you started this very awesome thing called Rockin' Pod. Now, what is Rockin' Pod? And like, how did that get started?
It started because this is, I'm an obsessive person. So like, I don't know when to leave well enough alone. So it's not like I can't just do a podcast. I have to create a damn convention and run a convention out of it. But anyway, the way it came about was I was doing the podcast for a few years and, you know, as a lot of us, as we're doing right now, a lot of us will do stuff over Skype and stuff. And there was like a lot of shows where the hosts had never met each other in person. They just did the show, you know, through the internet. And, it was always like we'd have these conversations and be like, man, it sucks that you live 600 miles away. It'd be cool to have a beer sometime. And we never had a way of doing it until my friend BJ Cramp from Rock and or Roll podcast, he was like, we should have a meetup or something. And he was like, and you live in Nashville, and Nashville is kind of a good touristy music town, so why don't we try to do it there? And I was like, okay, well, if we're going to have a meetup, then how are we going to pay for it? And he's like, well, we should crowdfund it. I'm like, okay, well, if our listeners are going to pay for us to meet each other, they should be able to come too. So if they're going to come to see us, they shouldn't just have to sit around and stare at us, talk to each other. So I was like, maybe I should get some vinyl and memorabilia vendors. So I did that. And then, as you guys probably know, a lot of the rock guys from back in the day moved out here and live out here. So that's been a great source for interviews for me over the years. So I just started calling in favors, going, would you come to this and meet some podcasts, do some interviews, meet some fans? And they're like, yeah. So it just organically turned into a convention. It wasn't even supposed to be a convention. It was just going to be a meetup. And then it's, you know, now we're going into our fourth year.
So that means it started in, help me with the math, because we skipped the year. We skipped the year because of having a do-over year.
It's just, well, it would have been, I guess.
This would have been the fifth year, right?
Well, no, it is our fourth. With 2017, 2018, and 2019, we did it. And then 2020, we did not.
Right.
And now 2021, we're doing it. So it's really the fourth, but it would have been the fifth if we'd gone forward.
Gotcha. So what is, so this has evolved, obviously, over the years. And so what is new for this year that you haven't done in the past?
Well, we've expanded it a lot. I mean, this year we're in a new venue. We have two ballrooms to use. So we're going to have one ballroom that'll be kind of like the main regular convention hall. It'll have a stage with panels and stuff and a lot of the vinyl vendors. And of course, we'll have several guests that are coming that want their own vendor table to meet, you know, fans and, you know, sell autographs and stuff. So that'll be kind of a standard convention hall. Then we have a podcaster ballroom where a third of the ballroom will be live podcast sessions happening in front of a crowd. And then the rest of the room is kind of home base for the podcasters. Like, Lou, you came in 2019, so you saw how cramped everybody was into one room that year.
But it was super fun, man. It was super fun.
It was fun, but it's going to be much better for sound and everything this way.
Yeah, that was a little like, I was remember interviewing bands and like, you know, like really straining to hear like kind of what they were saying. But yeah.
Yeah, it'll be better for that. And also, but yeah, we've got more guests, more podcasts. We have over 30 podcasts coming this year. So one thing I've noticed that is kind of on the comeback trail is streaming radio shows. We have quite a few of those coming this year. And that seems like those are kind of on a comeback now, maybe because of the licensing with music and stuff. I'm guessing that's why those have grown in popularity again. But yeah, we have a pre-party concert the night before. The expo's on Saturday. We're going to be doing a movie screening. Can't say too much about that just yet after the expo. I think you already know, Lou.
But, yeah, we talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, but and then Sunday, you know, and by the time most of you hear this, we'll have it announced this week. But Carmine Appice and Vinny Appice are going to be announced this week.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so they're going to be, we're booking SIR for the day on Sunday, and they're going to be doing like some drum master classes, and they have a podcast called Hanging and Banging that they're going to do a live version of that at SIR also. So, and then we have the comedians coming, Craig Gass, Don Jameson from That Metal Show, and Courtney Cronin Dold. They're going to do a special comedy show Sunday night downtown it'll include music too, and they're working on a special guest for that. So it's 3 days, and hopefully I survive it.
Yeah. And okay, so I you sort of answered this, but just sort of maybe kind of fill in the gaps for the total dunces in the audience. I'm not a podcaster. Why would I go to this?
Right.
Just fill it in.
Well, it's really a weekend to kind of just celebrate the genre of rock and roll. And like the podcast, well, obviously people like me and Lou and you guys would be, you know, to me, I bring in all the special guests as bait to get people into podcasting. That's the my main motivation every year. So obviously it's cool. So but we have plenty of celebrity guests coming this year that are in the rock field. One panel that I'm really excited about and three guests that are going to be on it is All of Us Grew Up on MTV. So we've got Mark Goodman, the original MTV VJ, Matt Pinfield, and Ricky Rackman, who hosted Headbangers Ball.
Oh, hell,
they're
going to
be on a panel about MTV, which is going to be awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And then, but like a lot of these guests will have their own table. They'll be doing meet and greets and signing and photo with everything with fans. And there's that. There's a lot of vinyl and memorabilia vendors. There's going to be stage panels all day. We will actually have some acoustic performances on stage this year. Time signing sessions. We'll have live speed painting artists doing rock and roll painted stuff. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on there. But yeah, it's going to be a really, really fun event this year.
It was a total blast in 2019. I got to tell you that. And this sounds like bigger and better. And, you know, just, it seems like, you know, each, and I know as you go through it, like each time you get a little better, you builds up a little bit better. We learn from mistakes and, you know, things like that. So also I want to add that, like, those of you that aren't familiar with Nashville is a kick ass town. It is a partying place. We only went out one night into the city, and I won't make that mistake again. Go out every night, be Ubering from the hotel to go, because it is and it is not, you know, I was just under the impression, because it was so associated with country music, that this is going to be a very kind of, like, everything closes early because we're going to church in the morning and the whole thing. And I was completely shocked. So that is not what it is. It's way more like New Orleans or Vegas, to be honest.
And I tried to tell him that.
Yeah, it's a party town, and it stays open late too. And yeah, if I have friends coming from out of town, I'll take them down to Broadway and everything, because that's the tourist trap. But it gets pretty insane down there. But I will say we do have a pre-party concert the night before that is downtown. It's a little bit off the strip, thankfully. But it's at a great place called the Mercy Lounge, big club. And we will have the opening of the show is going to be Ron Keel doing an acoustic set. So I'm excited to have him back. Then we've got a local band called Rock United. They do like a lot of 70s rock covers. And then Tommy Skio, who used to be in Tesla, his new band Resist and Bite is going to play a headline set. And then they're going to do some Tesla tunes also. And then after that, we have the Rare Hair set that my friend Tyson Leslie, who plays keys and Vixen, organizes. And it's usually about over 100 players in that set.
Oh, man.
It's different lineups for every single song. And it's some of the best, like, metal cover songs you'll ever hear. And we'll have several of the expo guests getting up on stage and doing songs that night. It's going to be a great show.
Yeah. Fantastic. And what are the dates, and how can people get more information?
The weekend is August 6th through the 8th, pre-party on Friday the 6th, expo on Saturday, the SIR stuff, which will be announced soon, will be on Sunday. Just go to rockthenpod.com and you can get your tickets there. We are sold out of the VIPs. We sold out this week, but we have plenty of regular general admission and early admission tickets available.
Awesome. And you guys put together this awesome commercial, and I'm going to play it right now. So everybody listen to this. This is badass. You guys are going to love it.
This August will rock as Rockin' Pod returns to Nashville. This annual convention brings together rock artists, fans, and podcasters for an unforgettable rock experience. Meet Billy Sheehan, Ron Keel, Ricky Rackman, Mark Goodman, Matt Pinfield, Don Jameson of That Metal Show, drum legends Carmine Appice and Vinny Appice, along with current and former members of Winger, LA Guns, Accept, Roxy Blue, and more. Panels, signing sessions, and vinyl and memorabilia vendors all available to you at Rockin' Pod. Music podcasters from all over North America.
Oh, what happened?
What happened?
What? This is what I get for streaming. Anyways, I will download that and play the whole thing in its entirety. You guys get the impression there. And I have the web address as Rock and Pod Expo, Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. Is that right?
Either one. Or either Nashville one. RockandPodExpo.com or just RockandPod.com.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm having unstable internet. You messaged me and said we were freezing.
It was freezing once in a while. So
yeah, you know, internet. Anyway, but it's all recorded direct into the computer, so none of that's going to matter as it goes out to all the places later on. So, Chris, man, can you? We're gonna wrap up here with maybe another round, and then we do This Day in Music. Can you hang out with the and bullshit with us for maybe another 15 minutes? You good?
Yeah, no
awesome.
Problem.
Awesome. Guys, check it out, rockandpod.com or NashvilleRockandPodExpo.com to get more information, to get tickets. It is a super fun time. And, you know, we should talk to Ron because he listens to our show. Maybe we could get him Keel.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe we should see if we can get him on. Okay, cool, man. So, Lily, you got any more? Did you want to get one or two more maybe you want to talk about real quick?
Sure. We'll throw out Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses, featured as the opening track for Appetite for Destruction, 1988. Amazing way to open up the album. Axl Rose lets out an inhuman scream that certainly sets the mood for the rest of the album. He provides several screams throughout the entire song.
Yeah.
Personally, I think it's him getting some aggression out rather than jumping on a fan in stage, which probably should have kept with. They aren't screams for the sake of screaming, though they are controlled and they do sound good. So.
Yeah, it's great. I think there's some other... That album is peppered with some great screaming.
Oh, yeah.
Also, my good friend Matt Muckle is an amazing drummer. Just a little bit of trivia. That album, I believe, has cowbell on every song.
Really? I think we talked about that once.
Or every song except for one. It's like literally the album with the most cowbell on it. real quick, I'm just going to throw one out real quick, and I'm not going to say too much about it. Highway Star.
Oh, yeah.
By Deep Purple. That is one of the sickest screams. And that's real early rock. That is not like, you know, 80s or whatever. This is pretty early in rock, 72. Great track. If you don't know it, I don't know what rock you've been.
I don't know why you're listening if you haven't heard of that
exactly.
Song.
Yeah. So anyways, Highway Star by The Purple. So what do you got, Mr. Pittsburgh Kevin?
I got low hanging fruit here. It's Screaming Jay Hawkins. Yes. I put a spell on you. An oldie but goodie. Nice.
Yeah.
A lot of screaming in that one.
There
the original Shock Rocker.
Yeah.
Yep. Good pick. I have one of the ones I have on here that has, I think, some amazing kind of like, I don't know what else you would call this other than screaming, but all that whooping and hollering that David Lee Roth does on Running with the Devil.
Yeah. It counts.
That is like, yep. I mean, that's insane. And that is just, I mean, that's what a powerful track and what a great sort of like accent to what he's doing vocally. I mean, there's a lot of funny stories about that album and, you know, Ted Templeman saying, you know, being frustrated with David Lee Roth's vocals, but man, at the end of the day, you know, they found some way to capture magic. They just did.
Also the Van Halen track On Fire from 1994.
I was just going to say On Fire. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he could really do that. So, you know, look, man, Sammy might be a, you know, more like a straight up kind of singer, but David Lee can pull off that kind of craziness that just really adds some kind of energy.
It
complimented what Eddie was doing on the guitar really,
definitely,
really well.
Yeah.
Cause Eddie's off the hook with the guitar, you know? So those, and that was the thing, right, Chris? Remember, like that was the whole thing. You had the singer and the lead guitar player. They were kind of co-fronting the band. It was like the whole thing for like year. Like you start with Mick and Keith and you go to Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. You go to Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, Eddie Van Halen, David Lee Roth, Ian Gillan, Richie Blackmore, blah, 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 down the line. Jump in anytime you want to add something, Chris. I'm totally fine, dude. Lily?
You want me to do another?
Yeah.
Well, Chris mentioned Steven Tyler before, but I'm going to go ahead and put Dream On out there.
Of course.
Because it is one of the more, you know, prominent ones. The 1973 debut album featured the power ballad. He wrote Dream On about the hunger to be somebody. It was just a little sonnet that he wrote. He started playing one day. He never thought it would end up being a real song. Dream On gave many fans their first listen to the quote-unquote demon of screaming. More than halfway in, Tyler builds to a climax and lets loose incredibly. Joe Perry resisted playing the song live. He didn't really appreciate the musicality of it until later, but I did know it was a great song, so they put it in their set. I have not heard anybody be able to replicate this, and people have tried, other than Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. I heard him sing it once at a live concert, and he got real close to it. But people try to sing the song. They can't do the end. Just calm down. You're not going to be able to ever do it because he's amazing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's really kind of like Tyler discovering his real rock voice on that song.
When, yeah.
Because the rest of the song, he's singing it very low. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that first album, he sings a different way.
Oh, yeah.
But like with Dream On, he just sort of adapted that and just kept going with it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Chris, have you ever heard Ronnie Dio? I'm a Dio fan. Dio's my favorite singer. But you ever heard his version of it with Yngwie?
Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah, I remember loving it.
It's good, but it does not have, it doesn't quite get, there's something about the way Steven Tyler like pulled that off. We talked about this before.
Yeah.
There's just like, you have to do a certain thing on that song to really,
oh yeah, it's one of those you probably want to think twice before you cover it.
Yeah.
You're really going up against some tough competition.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and Dio is like, I mean, he's freaking amazing. And like, he sounds good. I mean, he's a great singer. And like, he doesn't do anything wrong, but it just doesn't have that thing.
Yeah. It's Steven's song.
It's this close. It's always this close.
Yeah. Quite frankly, man, Yngwie, I like, well, but that's the guitar. It's a little bit different. You know, he sounds great on it. But it's very cool. I want to talk about a guy who, you know, I mentioned Little Richard at the beginning, but, you know, we can't talk about screaming and rock. Or pop music or rock music without talking about the godfather of soul.
Here he is.
Dane Brown.
Dane Brown.
Dane Brown.
Here we go.
And I pulled this up. This is fun.
How did it make you feel?
This is from chartattack.com. And if this site works, it'll be a miracle because nothing is working tonight. But the top seven James Brown screams.
Oh, boy.
Baby, You're Right. Shout and Shimmy. Mm-hmm. Lost Someone from Live at the Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Rap.
Brother and of course, Rap. It works in the middle
and
of your speech.
And of course, it meets
there.
In the middle of the speech, yeah. Smoking and Drinking. Down and Out in New York City. That's a great tune. Great tune. I Got Ants in My Pants.
And I Want to Dance.
Mother Popcorn from Sex Machine. I Can't Stand Myself. But anyway, so those are some of James's great screams. Chartattack.com will give you some more information. Any other like honorable mentions, anything you guys want to say before we jump over to This Day in Music?
I'm not
there's
gonna
one okay. I thought of that there's one I thought of that I didn't think about, the I can't remember his name, it's like Millie or something, the singer for Steelheart. You remember Steelheart?
Oh yes. Oh my gosh, I can't even not believe I didn't think of that one.
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Amazing high notes.
I love all of his vocals.
Okay. All right. On this day in 1967 was a great year.
Why is that?
Not only was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band released, but this guy named, I don't know, he started his podcast, his name's Ludini. He was born in 1967.
No.
Maybe you heard of him.
I wasn't born for a long ass time.
Me neither.
I'm old. 1967, Procol Harum's A Whiter Shade of Pale entered the UK chart for the first time.
I love that song.
It is a great, it's a classic. A classic. The Who and Led Zeppelin appeared on this day in 69 at the Meriwether Post Pavilion, Columbia, Maryland. This was the only time the two groups ever appeared together, with Zeppelin opening the show. On the tickets, Zeppelin was spelled Lead Zeppelin.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone has that ticket, it's probably worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
On this day in 1973, check this out, Chris. In this day in 1973, Carole King played a concert in Central Park, which attracted an audience of 100,000 people.
Wow.
Nice.
Good Holy wow. crap. I mean, I know she, like that like Tapestry album is like, you know, that's all, you know, that's absolutely amazing. But cry my knee.
I knew she was big. I didn't know she was that big. Yeah. And that reminds me of like Grand Funk Railroad, apparently, in like 69, 70. They were selling out stadiums. And it's like, Grand Funk Railroad? Really?
And now they play casinos.
Yep. Yeah.
With Bruce Kulick, formerly of
Yes, right. thank you. Yeah.
Mark Farner is no longer in the band. He hasn't been in the band for. He went to. I heard that he had like gone into Christian music or something. Am I off on that?
I think you're right. I think he did.
But Okay. Real quick. Dire Straits, on this day in 1985, the year I graduated high school, scored their second UK number one album with Brothers in Arms. Brothers in Arms was one of the first albums to be directed at the CD market. Was a fully digital recording at the time when most popular music was recorded on analog equipment. The album won 2 Grammy Awards, also won Best British Album in the 87 Brit Awards, went on to sell over 30 million copies worldwide. Who can forget? Can't forget. Oh, wow. Money for nothing.
Away from that
money for nothing.
I know. I have it around. I have it on vinyl. I bought that record. I was like, dang. In 97, a report showed that Elvis Presley was now the world's best-selling posthumous entertainer. Worldwide sells over 1 billion, over 480 active fan clubs, and an estimated 250,000 UK fans who still buy his record. Ironically, he had died owing $3 million.
Yeah, he makes more dead than he did alive.
They yeah. say that. You know, I've heard that too. I've heard like, I heard Grohl, Dave Grohl on Howard Stern show talking about this one time, that like, people don't realize like, Nirvana is still a business.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
They have to have meetings and like business meetings and stuff with the rest of the guys, wow. including Courtney Cox, and they have to discuss things.
Courtney Cox.
Yes. Courtney Love.
Courtney Love.
Why is Courtney Cox there?
I think Courtney Cox should
she
be
should be there.
The
I think they'd rather have
I mean,
her
she
there.
Was from the 90s, right?
Sure, yeah, right?
Of course.
She's their friend, of course.
She's a friend.
I mean, she might be.
I'm terrible at that.
Oh, man.
You can see why this podcast is so popular, Chris.
Yeah.
So, let me see. Do we have any good... Okay, we have a few birthdays. Hal David.
Hal David.
You know who Hal David is, right?
Who's Hal David?
Burt Bacharach and Hal David. Come on.
Yeah,
close to you, magic moments, say a little prayer. They sure. wrote all the songs together that everybody, yeah. Whatever.
That hell.
You oh, guys, yeah. come on.
Butch
guys,
Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Right.
I didn't know that. I read it.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to Tom T. Hall.
Yeah, there you go.
And
Nashville the, guy.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm. Klaus Main. Same. Scorpions.
Klaus Happy yeah. birthday, Klaus Main.
Happy birthday to you.
I love Klaus.
I think that, you know, Wind of Change was a giant hit.
Not here so
and,
much.
Well, I mean, you know, it was about the fall of the
yeah.
the Berlin Wall. I mean, I remember when that happened, man. It was like freaky. It was like all of a sudden,
well,
the wall's gone. Like, what the hell, you know?
Did you see that podcast that came out last year about
yes.
the, about that song?
Yeah, I listened to it.
Crazy there's a conspiracy. Stuff. There's a podcast conspiracy thing that came out. It's a whole series on how they're theorizing that the CIA was behind the writing of that song.
Yes. yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I did not recognize this guy because I know him as Robbie, but not Robert. Robbie Steinhardt from the band Kansas, the violin player.
Yes.
And he also sang some of their songs and duetted a little bit with Steve Walsh. Happy birthday to Robbie Steinhardt today.
Did the dude with the eye patch?
Yeah. No, that's Rich Williams. I'm a Kansas nerd.
I know. Truly he is.
I am. Paul Weller from The Jam, happy birthday to you. And Lauryn Hill, Fuji. Oh, she's
yeah,
a Fuji.
She was in Sister Act 2.
True.
That's right. So she was.
Wow.
I know wow. a lot of stupid things, there just so everyone go. Knows.
We should just call this like the section useless knowledge. Anyways,
I guess you've listened to my show.
Chris, go ahead and plug your podcast. We're going to get the hell out of here. Plug your podcast, where people can find you, and go ahead and give the Rockin' Pod info again, please.
Sure. Decibel Geek Podcast. Just, you can go to decibelgeek.com. We're also on the Pantheon Podcast Network and you know, iTunes, Stitcher, all those places, wherever you can find podcasts, we're pretty much there. Rockin' Pod Expo, just go to rockinpod.com or NashvilleRockinPodExpo.com. And just look up Rockin' Pod, all one word, on Facebook. There's a group with a lot of people in it, and that's where you get the most activity. And, yeah, I hope you'll join us in August. It's a lot of fun, and we'll see you in Nashville.
Awesome. Chris, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Lily?
My show is Hot Licks with Lily Six, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Rock Rage Radio. You can download the app for free or just go to rockrageradio.com. I am hosting a show on Saturday at the Subalpine. Lily Six is live Saturdays, starts at 7, so be there if you're in Turtle Creek, Pennsylvania.
Awesome. And shout out one more time to Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online to get custom paint job on your musical instrument. Temporarily, LouLombardiMusic.com, but soon, new website is coming. Guys, remember, if you're listening to us on places like iTunes, please give us a good rating and a review and subscribe, because it really helps us out. We do appreciate it. It's totally free, right? Doesn't cost you a thing.
Not a free thing.
Just to do a nice thing. Chris Sinzak, thank you so much for hanging out. Lily V6, we love you. Pittsburgh Kevin.
Love yous.
You're the best. Guys, have a great week. We'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Take care, guys.